Welcome to episode 211 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast. This show was recorded the week of February 24th, 2014. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. This week's episode of the Fredcast is brought to you by Jensen USA, where you'll find a fantastic selection of complete bikes, components, accessories, apparel, nutrition, and more, all at phenomenal prices with unparalleled customer service. When you need anything for cycling, simply go to jensenusa.com/thefredcast. And by Fazari Performance Bicycles, where they design and build high-performance road and mountain bikes using the most advanced design techniques, materials, and components, and they sell it all manufacturer direct for huge savings and provide you with a custom fit to ensure comfort, performance, and satisfaction. Go to Fazari.com, that's F-E-Z-Z-A-R-I.com, to learn more. And now also by Lynda.com, that's LYNDA.com/Fredcast. Lynda.com will help anyone learn software, creative, and business skills to achieve personal and professional goals with their incredible library of classes and tutorials on a wide variety of subjects. Get a 7-day free trial simply by going to Lynda.com/Fredcast. Now, sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. Hey, fellow Freds, welcome back to another episode of the Fredcast. Great to have you back here with us. Days are starting to get a little bit warmer, so we've got a lot of stuff for you in today's episode of the Fredcast. But before we get into today's show, I would be remiss if I didn't thank our good friends and longtime supporters, Jensen USA, at jensenusa.com/thefredcast. Jensen USA is the place where you can get everything for your cycling needs, from apparel to components to nutrition and everything in between, including complete bikes. You're going to find a great selection, incredible prices, and unparalleled customer service. And right now, Jensen USA is having an amazing deal on complete bikes with models up to nearly 70% off select models, and some new price drops all the time. Spring has almost sprung, which means for those of you who have been putting off that new bike purchase, now is a great time to go visit Jensen USA. You're going to find some great prices. So go ahead and check them out. Once again, they're at jensenusa.com/thefredcast, and make sure you let them know you heard about it here on the show. Better yet, click on the jensenusa.com link right there on thefredcast.com. That will let them know for you. We thank Jensen USA for their support of the Fredcast. And as always, we thank you for your support of Jensen USA. Hey, before we get started with this week's show, I just wanted to mention one thing to you, and that is that it is finally time to release the 2014 edition of the Team Fredcast kit. I am really proud of the design. And you know what? It's time for an update anyway. So here's what we're going to have for you this year. Once again, our partner is going to be Black Bottom Cyclewear at blackbottoms.com. Again, another local Utah company that I love supporting. I think they make some great apparel and they're just really fantastic to work with. So whether you're buying Team Fredcast kit from them, or you're looking for something for your club or your race team, or for your charity ride, they're a great source. I'm really happy to support them and have them on board again. We are going to have this year jerseys, we are going to have this year shorts, and we are also going to have socks. Now, the socks will be made by Sock Guy. I just really like their socks, and so we will have Sock Guy socks as well. If you go to the website, go to thefredcast.com/store, you will get a preview of the jerseys and the shorts and the socks. And they will be going on sale sometime in the next couple of days. So watch the website. And of course, as soon as everything goes live with real prices and real availability, I will tweet it out and also put it on the Facebook page. And of course, talk about it on the next episode of the Fredcast. Now, we will have pre-orders, which means that for about a month, we'll allow you the opportunity to order your kit at a reduced price. At that point, we'll close the pre-orders, we'll place the actual order with Black Bottoms, and about 4 to 6 weeks later, you will receive your kit. For those of you who don't get in for the pre-order, yes, the price will go up a little bit. We'll only have a limited quantity of regular priced items initially. If we need to order more after that, we can, But the best bet will be in the next couple of days to place your order for your 2014 Team Fredcast kit. Once again, I'm really pleased with the design. I had a lot of people helping me with it. I hope you will like it too. And I hope you'll place your order as soon as everything goes live in just a couple of days. All right, I've talked enough about sponsors and about the Fredcast. Time to get into the news. Topping off the news on this week's episode of the Fredcast is actually a story that we found over on our friend Fritz's Cyclicious blog. And if you're not familiar with Cyclicious, get familiar. That's cyclelicio.us, Cyclicious. And Fritz is in Northern California, if you're not familiar with him, and he tells us of a new bill in the state of California. It's Senate Bill number 1183 that, if passed, would allow cities, counties, regional park districts, believe it or not, to impose special taxes on the purchase of bicycles with wheels larger than 20 inches. Reading directly from the bill, this bill would authorize a city, county, or regional park district to impose a special tax, a point of sale tax on new bicycles, with the rate of the tax to be determined by the local agency. The bill would exclude from the tax bicycles with wheels of 20 inches or less in diameter. Now, it also goes on to say the State Board of Equalization would be collecting the tax. That's the same agency in California that collects sales and use taxes. And it goes on to say the bill would require the local agency to use bicycle tax revenues for improvements to paved and natural surface trails, including existing and new trails, and for associated maintenance purposes. Now, it seems like every spring, or at least increasingly in the springtime, bills like this pop up all around the United States. There was a recent one, I believe it was down in Georgia, another one in Illinois, and they seem to pop up all over the place, looking to find additional ways to fund transportation infrastructure for bicycles. And of course, most of us who own bicycles and ride bicycles are also motorists, and typically also taxpayers, homeowners, and a lot of those same taxes are generally supposed to be earmarked, to go toward transportation infrastructure. So it's interesting to see that California has now hopped on this bandwagon as well. Now, this bill was introduced by California State Senator Mark DeSaulnier. He's a Democrat from Concord, California. According to Fritz, the 7th Senate District in California includes the East Bay, east of the Berkeley Hills, and goes all the way to western Sacramento, which means that this is primarily suburban and in some cases rural locations that Senator DeSaulnier represents. Now, interestingly, in case you didn't know this, and I think we talked about this on The Spokesman recently, the city of Colorado Springs in Colorado does indeed already have a bicycle tax, about $4. So every time you buy a bike, you pay an extra $4 on that bike, and it raises about $85,000 every year, which goes toward city parks and trails. And so it's a little bit of extra money and a way for cyclists to sort of help foot the bill for a lot of that infrastructure. Now, again, as I said, lots of cyclists pay taxes in lots of other ways, and so there are a lot of people who, of course, are upset about Senate Bill 1183. If you'd like to weigh in and give your opinion, I have put a link in the show notes to where you can get more information about Senate Bill 1183, as well as where you can get information about the individual who introduced the bill, California Senator, State Senator Mark DeSaulnier. Speaking of legislators, we all remember when we were in school, whether it be elementary school, junior high, or high school, and we were in a civics class or a history class, and the teacher assigned us the task of contacting a congressperson, a senator, a local legislator on an issue of interest. And so we would dutifully write our letters and hope that we would get at least a form letter back. Well, now imagine that you're a 17-year-old and your mom was just the victim of a bike accident. Sandy Catrone was struck by a van and thrown from her bike at a crosswalk in suburban New York. And thankfully, she was wearing a helmet because she did suffer a concussion and broken bones. And perhaps if she hadn't been wearing a helmet, it might have been a much more tragic story. Well, her 17-year-old son used the classroom assignment that I've just described to you to write a letter to his local county legislator. In this case, it's Suffolk County, New York. And the legislator that Matthew Cutrone wrote to was Thomas F. Baraga, the legislator for the 11th District of Suffolk County, New York. Now, here's the letter that Matthew Cutrone got back from his legislator. By the way, I should also mention, not only was Matthew's mother, Sandy, hit by a car while out biking, but according to an account that I've read, four of his classmates were also struck by cars, either cycling or walking. So he writes a letter to his local legislator out of concern, saying, what exactly can my local legislators do for me? And here's the letter that he got back. It's dated January 29th, 2014, and it reads, Dear Mr. Cutrone, thank you for your recent letter concerning bicycle safety and bicycle lanes. Let me at the outset express the hope that your mother will have a complete recovery from her accident in September while riding a bicycle in West Islip. I have lived in West Islip most of my life, and my personal feeling is that no one who lives in our hamlet, or for that matter in Suffolk County, should ever ride a bicycle or a motorcycle. I cannot tell you how many constituents over the years have told me that they're taking up bicycling for pleasure and exercise. I've told them not to do so, but they usually do not listen. 90% of those people eventually were hit by an automobile, like your mother, with serious physical injuries. I've heard the suggestion of bicycle lanes and additional signage, but unfortunately, this would do little to solve the problem. Suffolk County is a suburban automobile community. Drivers expect to see other drivers on the road, not bicyclists and motorcyclists. Even though in those areas outside of Suffolk County where a portion of the road is for bicyclists, they still get hit by motorists. Signage has limited effects. There are currently 135 signs between Montauk Highway and Sunrise Highway on Higbee Lane and Udall Road. Most of them are ignored by drivers. Reality at a time can be difficult for some to come to grips with, but giving false hope would be inappropriate. Very truly yours, Thomas F. Baraga, County Legislator. Let me reread a couple of things from that letter very, very quickly. My personal feeling is that no one who lives in our hamlet, or for that matter in Suffolk County, should ever ride a bicycle or a motorcycle. And 90% of those people who have come to him for advice about cycling eventually were hit by an automobile, and many of them with serious physical injuries. This from a legislator in Suffolk County, New York. Now, you would think here in the United States we're a bit more enlightened, but unfortunately, people with opinions like this do exist. Now, the organization People for Bikes, of course, put this up on their website under the headline, Don't Scare Our Kids Away from Biking, Thomas Baraga. And the comments are very, very interesting. The number of people who were thinking, just like I did when I first read this letter, and perhaps like you did when you heard me reading it, many of them saying, who is this guy and how did he ever get elected to public office? Some of them saying, look, I think he's being realistic. He's saying the roads are dangerous and you should be careful. But look, from my perspective, I just don't think that somebody who is paid by we the people, somebody who is elected to a high legislative post, should be saying something like, no one who lives in our hamlet or in our county should ever ride a bicycle or a motorcycle. Sorry, Mr. Baraga, not in 2014. It reminds me one time, I remember I went to an ear, nose, and throat doctor. I think I had a cold or something. And he asked me what I liked to do for my pastime. He expected me to say golf or something. And I told him, I'm a mountain biker. I really love mountain biking. And he stopped and he looked at me earnestly right in the eyes. And he said, you need to stop doing that right away. That is a dangerous sport and you will get killed. Now, needless to say, I never went back to that doctor again. Here's a legislator that I think needs to hear from we the people, needs to hear from his constituents. Quite frankly, I'd be okay if he heard from people from all over the country, indeed all over the world, to let him know why I think he's wrong and how insensitive it is for him to be writing back to a young high school student whose mother was hit by a car and very, very likely could have been killed, thankfully wasn't, and who four of whose friends had been hit by cars, and to give him this kind of a response, I just, it took me aback, and I'm sure it takes you aback as well. Of course, there's links in the show notes to where you can see the letter for yourself, and also links to Mr. Baraga's website if you feel so inclined to communicate with him. It's a sad state of affairs when we elect people who have these kinds of opinions in 2014. Well, next up, a couple of studies to tell you about. The first one coming from New Zealand, where both cycling and rugby are each very popular pastimes. Now, when we talk about cycling, especially when you talk to non-cyclists, a lot of times they will bring up the fact that their belief is that cycling is not a safe sport. So a medical student, Michael Cheng, supervised by Professor Alistair Woodward at the Auckland University, did a little bit of a study. First thing he looked at was the fact that in 2012 on New Zealand's roads, 8 cyclists were killed, 161 were seriously injured, and 637 suffered minor injuries, as reported by the police. There could have been other minor injuries, but these are the ones that were involved in police reports. And he looked at cyclists doing 2-hour bike rides or more, and he calculated that about 6,000 2-hour bike rides took place for every cycling injury claim that came up. Then he looked at another very popular pastime in New Zealand, rugby, and he found that there was one rugby injury claim for every 167 games, thereby concluding that cycling was about 35 times safer than participating in rugby. But he went further. He concluded that a 2-hour bike ride was about 6 times safer than horseback riding, 15 times safer than a day skiing, and 35 times safer, once again, than a game of rugby. Now, if you've ever been to New Zealand, you know that they are crazy for their rugby there. And not a lot of Americans play rugby. I happened to have the opportunity to play rugby in high school, and I started in college, but realized I was a lot smaller than those guys. Rugby's a tough sport. And so it is interesting to note these conclusions, and something that you can use kind of as ammunition when you're sitting around with non-cycling friends and they start to tell you how unsafe it is to ride your bike out on the roads. Now, of course, it goes beyond that. One of the things that we talk about as cyclists all the time is whether or not the general media and indeed sometimes the endemic media make cycling sound more dangerous than it is. And so these statistics are very useful in helping to show people that cycling can be safer than it's sometimes perceived or presented to be. Because when the media portrays cycling as overly dangerous or puts too much emphasis on the dangers potentially associated with cycling, it will turn people off. There is research that indicates that. Of course, we get into this a lot of times when we talk about the helmet debate and whether or not requiring people to wear helmets prevents them from having a desire to get on a bicycle and get out on the road. So this is very interesting stuff. Now, according to Mr. Cheng, the cycling versus rugby studies author, quote, a typical rider would be out on his or her bike for 7 years before an injury, and on average would be riding for 70 years before suffering an injury sufficiently severe to be admitted to hospital, unquote. Very interesting statistics, and one which I hope that you'll be able to use at your next cocktail party or event where you're sitting around with non-cyclists. Okay, and if that study won't help get your friends on their bicycles, here's one that not only is going to want to get them on their bicycles, well, at least the men, but it's also going to encourage them to get faster. This is a study by Dr. Eric Postma from the Institute of Evolutionary Biology at the University of Zurich and published in the Royal Society journal Biology Letters. The study itself is called, you're going to love this, A Relationship Between Attractiveness and Performance in Professional Cyclists. Here's what Dr. Postma did. Dr. Postma showed people, 80 professional cyclists from the 2012 Tour de France. All of the cyclists were essentially of similar physical stature. They were all, of course, tanned because they were participating in the Tour de France. And as usual with the Tour, they were all about the same age. He went to about 800 people and he asked these people to score each cyclist's attractiveness based just on their facial appearance, just what they looked like. Now, if the individual recognized the cyclist, let's say it was Chris Froome or whomever, Jens Voigt, then their scores were excluded. Then what he did was he looked at the attractiveness scores and he compared those to how the cyclists did in the Tour de France, time trials, the overall general classification, sprints, etc. And what he found, actually, I'll let Dr. Postma give it to you in his own words, quote, "To my initial surprise, I found a positive relationship between the two, and it was actually quite strong." Continuing with his quote, "If we took the 10% best riders and compared their performance to the 10% worst, we found the best were on average seen to be 25% more attractive than the worst ones. We don't know what people are picking up in the faces that is signaling the rider's performance." Now, some biologists have argued that it's possible that evolution has shaped the way people choose their mates, particularly women. It's, according to biologists, women may have been wired over the millennia to select mates on the basis of whether or not they would make good fathers and whether or not they would pass on good genes. Now, you can imagine in prehistoric times, if you were looking for a mate, you needed somebody who could hunt well, somebody who could defend the family well, and therefore being physically fit would be seen as being attractive. So therefore, somebody who's healthy, somebody who's physically fit would be seen as more attractive by women. Okay, but here's the interesting thing. A lot of men would say, well, I'm not really good at rating the attractiveness of another man because a lot of men aren't attracted to other men, and therefore they think that they would have a hard time judging that attractiveness. But in the study, the researchers found that men who took part had a pretty similar view on who was handsome and who wasn't, and that view was very similar to the women. And so therefore, according to various articles, it says that perhaps men also have the ability, indeed, despite their defenses otherwise, to judge who is handsome. And they think that it may be, in this case, as a way that men have evolved to rate those with whom they might be in competition. Again, thinking back perhaps to prehistoric times, you would be competing with others of the same sex for a mate, and therefore you had to size up your competition, and that's the way that men have also been wired by evolution. It's really fascinating. Bottom line of all of this, however, is for those of you who are a little slower than the friends with whom you ride, you might want to work on your speed, especially if you are looking to find someone of the opposite sex. By the way, here's a little postscript to that story. The 2012 Tour de France was won, of course, by Sir Bradley Wiggins. And so the question you might be asking yourself is, okay, how did Wiggins, and indeed perhaps his teammate Chris Froome, who won the 2013 Tour de France, how did they rate in this study? According to Dr. Postma, quote, "Unfortunately, Team Sky decided to wear sunglasses for their photos, and to improve standardization, I decided not to include them." Again, continuing in his own words, "That is really a pity," unquote. For those of you who have been listeners to the Fredcast for any period of time, you know that one of my favorite events of the early season every year for the recreational cyclist in Southern California is the Tour de Palm Springs. As a matter of fact, it's the first event where I completed a century. It's also the event where I took my then 10-year-old daughter, Emily, and we did the metric century as we were preparing for our ride across the state of California a couple of months later. Well, unfortunately, tragedy struck the Tour de Palm Springs this year when 55-year-old LaVon Coaster was struck and killed by a truck on mile 67 of this year's event. Now, Ms. Coaster was riding west on Avenue 60 in Thermal, California, when she crossed Harrison Street in front of a southbound 1999 Dodge. Paramedics did rush Ms. Coaster to John F. Kennedy Memorial Hospital in Indio, but unfortunately she was pronounced dead at the scene. Now, the truck driver did stop, but he was not arrested. We found out later that, of course, neither drugs, well, not of course, but we found out later that neither drugs nor alcohol were factors in the crash. But what we learned, unfortunately, was that Ms. Koester had actually run a stop sign at that intersection. And I went on Google Earth and I checked it out. Avenue 60, both directions of Avenue 60 have stop signs, but Harrison Street, also known as Old California 86, has no stop signs. So when Ms. Harrison went through, it's entirely possible that the truck driver had the right of way, and unfortunately she was struck and killed. It's very sad to hear when something like this happens, and even worse when it has to do with a mass event, like the events that many of us either have done or similar to ones that we will do in the future, and certainly if it involves anybody having done anything wrong. Now, having been involved in planning events for thousands of cyclists, Tour de Palm Springs purportedly attracts about 10,000 cyclists every year in various distances. There's not only the metric century and the century, but there's some shorter distances as well. And so you can imagine the logistics and the challenges that happen for both organizers and law enforcement in situations like this. Now, typically what happens in events like this is you see a lot of law enforcement around the start, because you have so many cyclists on the street, and also around the finish, just simply because people are more tired as they're coming through, and also simply because you're just going to have a lot of cars and cyclists in that area. Now, out in Thermal, California, especially at mile 67, you're talking about a lot fewer cyclists because they're doing the century, the longer distance. Also much more spread out, because by the time you get to mile 67, you can imagine how spread out it would be. And so in a lot of cases, you don't see law enforcement helping to control intersections as you get into the larger miles of courses like this. And so if there's a lesson to be learned by those of us who are cyclists, it is that not only do we need to, as I always say, be good cycling citizens, and not only do we need to obey traffic laws so that we are safe, and also so that the communities will want us to come back again as well. I know that some of the rides that I've helped plan, that's been a challenge in the past, where cyclists will go out, run stop signs, run stop lights, not yield to pedestrians in crosswalks, unfortunately relieve themselves on people's lawns, throw energy bar wrappers and goo wrappers on the ground, things like that. So we just need to be good cycling citizens. But also, I've always said before, you get around mile 70 of a century, and that's the time when, especially, and I don't know about this particular rider, especially riders who maybe it's their first century, or maybe they just are feeling very tired around that mile 70 mark. It's kind of a magic mark where people aren't paying quite as much attention. So if you're a more experienced rider or you're feeling better on a ride, make sure that you use that time to remind people that now's the time to pay even more attention. Now's the time even more to follow those rules even more than normal, because tragedies like this can happen and it is avoidable. So, let's be careful out there and let's take care of each other out there when we're on these mass rides. Now, another mass event that I've participated in the past and was looking forward to participating in again in the future is the Southern Nevada Regional Transportation Commission's Viva Bike Vegas. You'll remember Mrs. Fredcast and I did that ride 2 years ago and really enjoyed the ride. They had distances that ranged from about 20 miles up to well in excess of 100 miles. Matter of fact, I think we did the double metric when we did Viva Bike Vegas. Well, unfortunately, at the end of January, the Regional Transportation Commission of Southern Nevada announced that they will not be staging Viva Bike Vegas in 2014. They posted on their Facebook page saying, quote, "We would like to thank you for your generous support of our annual RTC Viva Bike Vegas event. With your help, we've been able to successfully organize an annual event that attracted thousands of cyclists from all over the world to Southern Nevada. This year, the RTC has decided to forego organizing a 2014 Viva Bike Vegas event, and instead refocus our resources toward more ongoing support for community cycling activities and initiatives, including several smaller rides throughout the year, unquote. Now, according to Angela Castro, who is the RTC spokeswoman, I actually interviewed her for Interbike TV 2 years ago for the 2012 event. She said that the 2013 event lost about $117,000 and that while they had 2,351 cyclists in 2012, they only had 1,731 in 2013. And she reiterated the fact that it costs a lot of money, takes a lot of resources to put on an event like that. And as a result, RTC just couldn't see their way through doing it again in 2014. It's disappointing. It was a great ride. I really think it showcased, at least for me, although I had done plenty of riding in the Las Vegas area in the past, it showcased for me and for a lot of cyclists on the route what great possibilities there are for road riding all around the Las Vegas Valley. We went down the strip all the way down around Lake Mead to Hoover Dam, back up, and then back up through the Red Rock National Wildlife Area, which is gorgeous, got a fun climb in the middle. And so it was a great way to showcase Las Vegas as a cycling destination. My hope is either that RTC will find a way to do this a little bit more cost effectively in the future, or someone else will pick up the mantle and do essentially the same ride around the same time, because what a great time it is. It was always the weekend following Interbike, which made it a great event for cycling industry folks who participated in Interbike to then go out and enjoy a wonderful ride to sort of wind down after a week at the trade show. So hopefully it'll be back in the future. Unfortunately, not in 2014. Since the last episode of the Fredcast, a couple of new products came out that I wanted to tell you about, and they are both related, one from Shimano and one from Garmin. You know, GoPro has really opened up the action sports camera market. I mean, look at the Sochi Olympics that just concluded. It seemed like there were GoPros on every helmet, on every athlete, in every conceivable, well, okay, maybe not the figure skating, but in many of the events. And so Shimano and Garmin are both now looking to get into this market big time. First, Shimano, who announced their CM1000 Sport camera. This will be about a $300 camera that, according to Shimano, integrates with their electronics both in cycling and in fishing. For those of you who didn't know, Shimano is big in fishing and golf as well as in cycling. Now, this is a full HD camera. It'll produce 1080p video. It has an f2.0 lens that is supposed to work very, very well in low light conditions. You can shoot at 135 degree or super wide 180 degree angle. And what's really cool, it works a lot like your smartphone in that no matter where you flip the camera, you will still get a great horizontal image. So that way you don't get those vertical videos that everybody on YouTube complains about all the time. The sensor on it is a 1x3.8-inch back illuminated CMOS. And in stills, it will give you a 3.1 megapixel image. That's 4x3 resolution, 2032x1526. And in video, 3.6 megapixels and 16x9. So you're going to get a good widescreen HD video at 2528x1422 pixels. That's really kind of incredible. The still images it will shoot will be in JPEG. It will shoot, this is kind of cool, 1920x1080, 30 frames per second, 1280x720, 120 frames per second, and 640x360, 240 frames per second. In other words, if you're willing to go for a slightly lower resolution, you are going to get a much more stable video because you're going to have so many more frames per second, which is kind of a neat thing. It's also Ant Plus compatible so that it will integrate with existing electronics, including a new DI2 wireless unit that Shimano will be coming out with. Now, it comes with a lens cover, an adhesive mount, and a strap for strapping it on to a helmet. It also comes, of course, with a USB cable. But for those of you who are wondering, yes, A handlebar mount will also be available, as well as a flexible mount, a chest mount, and a cap mount as well. There will be iOS software and Android software, as well as software for Windows 7 and macOS. And not to be outdone, our friends over at Garmin have come out with the Virb. That's V-I-R-B action camera. Same price point, about $300 for, once again, a 1080p full HD camera that you can mount, well, pretty much anywhere. I'll talk to you about mounts in a moment. This camera is really, really cool. Again, Ant Plus connectivity, so that you can actually control it from your Garmin, as they say, your Garmin gizmos. But what's really cool is it includes built in a nice little screen that you can use as a viewfinder or to review what you have recorded, plus a lot more. So for instance, it's got a great user interface. As I said, this full color screen, what they say is an on and off button that you can use without taking off those mittens that your grandmother bought for you. And it's also got image stabilization. It's got a variety of different mounts. You can control it from your smartphone, or as I said, you can control it from your Garmin device using Ant Plus. And because it's Garmin, you can also overlay all kinds of data from your Ant Plus devices. GPS data, speed, heart rate. How cool would it be? You're going down a really difficult descent on your mountain bike and it's showing your heart rate going up and up and up, or, you know, in my case, climbing and watching my power go down and down and down and down. Really neat addition to the action camera scene. Again, according to Garmin, true 1080p HD video. It's got a 16 megapixel CMOS sensor. The display, it's called a chroma display. It's 1.4 inches and it gives you color, not just for displaying data, not just for your menus, but also as a viewfinder and a preview window as well. It's got a 2000 milliamp hour lithium ion battery, which will last up to 3 hours. It is rechargeable and removable, which means you can buy extra batteries later and put those in there, carry them with you if you like. Of course, it will do still images. It is rugged, durable, and waterproof. And if you want, if you're a scuba diver, you can actually buy a scuba housing for it as well. And they've got a video on their website that shows that really, really well. And of course, it includes some free software from Garmin if you don't have any editing software on your desktop computer. They're also going to be offering what they call the Virb Elite, which will add what they call a high sensitivity GPS accelerometer and altimeter, and also Wi-Fi connectivity so that you can control the camera with your smartphone app. And of course, if you're looking for mounts, well, you can get them curved or flat. So for instance, you could put it on the deck of your surfboard or your stand-up paddleboard, or you could put it on the dashboard of your car. There's a multi-use strap and all kinds of adapters that fit the mounts that, as they say, you may already have. And if you look at their website, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about if you didn't get my hint. This is a really cool looking camera. I'm looking forward to getting one and testing it, hopefully. So I'm writing to Garmin now and asking them about that. Now, I've talked before here on the show about the fact that I've tried all sorts of GoPros. And, you know, quite frankly, I find their user interface difficult to remember. As a matter of fact, I always have a GoPro manual on my iPhone or my iPad because I can never remember how to program the darn thing. I never know whether it's on or off. And as I've told you in the past, I've had a lot of problems with their mounts breaking on me. Like, oh, I don't know, right at the beginning of my big Gran Fondo in Italy. So I'm looking forward to trying these two because here are two companies that are very much in the cycling world that I think should be able to get it right. If you get one and you like it, let me know. I'm looking forward to trying both of these because I think that they may be keepers. One from Garmin, one from Shimano. Both kind of cool. Another new product I want to tell you about. This one is really good for families with young kids, especially if you'd like to teach your kids a little bit more about bikes than just how to ride without training wheels. This is the Schwinn Bike Board Game from Education Outdoors, a company out of Michigan. Now, in this game, you and the other players each choose from among a different kind of Schwinn bicycle. And that will be your playing piece as you go around the board. As you go around the board, you have the opportunity to read fun facts about bikes throughout history, and about bike parts, about how to ride, things like that. And then if you hit a question space, you also have the opportunity to answer questions about cycling. What's kind of nice about the game is there are four different playing levels, and you can play with people of different levels at the same time. So for instance, if you have really little kids, they would play at level one, and each of you listening better play at level four. That's the highest level. But you can also put your, you know, maybe your school age kids at level two, your teenage kids at level three, and you adults play at level four. And the questions, of course, get harder depending on what level you're playing at. Of course, if you hit the question and you answer it correctly, the one about off-road tires, then you get off-road tires, and then you can take the single track shortcut. But of course, if somebody else answers an off-road tire question, they can steal those tires from you, and then you're once again relegated just to the road. It's kind of a fun game, a great way for families to, again, if it's not nice weather outside, instead of actually getting on your bikes, play a game about bikes. Once again, it's the Schwinn Biking Board Game from Education Outdoors. Manufacturer's suggested retail is $24.99. I've got a link in the show notes to where you can buy it at Amazon if you are so inclined. Speaking of products, it's that time in the show that you love to hate. It is product recalls. This time, only one product recall to talk to you about. And this one is Cervelo P5 bicycles with 3T Aduro Aero handlebars. Here's the problem. On those aero bars, the forward extension mounts could detach from the base of the bar while riding. And of course, you know what could happen then. According to the CPSC, the rider could lose control, posing a risk of injury. Now, this is something we don't see all the time. A lot of times we hear about these recalls and the potential for injury, but a lot of times they're not necessarily known whether or not there are injuries. In this case, 3T has received 28 reports of incidents, including one report of a broken collarbone and four reports of abrasions. Okay, hang on for a second because the description of which bikes are involved here is a bit long. This involves 2012 and 2013 Cervelo P5 bikes equipped with, as I said, the 3T Aduro, that's A-D-U-R-O, aero handlebars. The bikes are black with red and white stripes. P5 is on the seat tube and Cervelo is on the top tube. And of course, there's a large E with an accent, right, on the down tube in white lettering. The handlebars have four major components: a base bar, which attaches to the bike, a forward extension mount, which attaches to the base bar, forearm rests, and forward extension bars, which attach to the forward extension mount. The base bar is black with red and white stripes and has 3T on the top and rear. The handlebars come with both a high and a low forward extension mount, one of which will be installed based on your particular fit. In this case, there are date codes involved here. First of all, the serial number on the handlebars, again, which were manufactured between January 2012 and July 2012, you'll find the serial numbers on a label inside the base bar under the stem cap on the rear wall. The serial numbers are a seven-digit number following FM Foxtrot Mike 78-base bar. And the manufacturing date code is in the first four digits of the serial number in the MMYY format, so month and year format. Remember, we're looking for January 2012 through July 2012. So the date codes for the defective handlebars range from 1201 to 1207. P5 bikes which have already been inspected and passed at retailers are distinguished by a green sticker with an E on the underside of the Aduro base bar. But look, don't chance it. Take your bike to your local Cervelo dealer, have them check it out, and get this fixed, because the last thing you need is to be just really hammering on one of these bikes and all of a sudden go down because the handlebars detach. So please, there is a link in the show notes to the actual recall with more information. Check it out. Get your bike fixed right away. A couple of quick bike share notes for you this week. First of all, Mayor Kasim Reed from the city of Atlanta, Georgia, announced that the city has started its contract negotiations with their preferred bike share vendor, CycleHop, and they are also looking for sponsors and also for locations to put the docks and kiosks for Atlanta's bike share system. Like most cities that have bike share, residents and visitors are going to have 24-hour access to GPS-enabled bikes 365 days a year, and they are hoping to launch in the spring of 2015 to eventually include 500 bicycles at 50 stations throughout the city of Atlanta. So great news for Atlanta getting their first bike share system next year. Meanwhile, I told you on the last episode of the Fredcast about the bankruptcy of Public Bicycle System Company, also known as Bixi, from Montreal, Canada. Now, Bixi uses a software platform originally from a company called 8D Technologies. Well, that relationship between Bixi and 8D soured recently. As a matter of fact, there is a lawsuit between the two. 8D sued Bixi for breach of contract. And that was one of the straws that helped break the camel's back, bringing Bixi to bankruptcy court. Well, it was recently announced that the Alta Bicycle Share System, based in Portland, Oregon, has now formed a new strategic partnership with 8D Technologies to use 8D's software as part of the Alta Bike Share System. Now, if Alta doesn't ring a bell as much as Bixi, those of you in Boston and Washington, D.C. will know that your systems are operated with 8D Technology software. And of course, for those of you who have heard of Citibike, that, you know, in that little town, New York City, that is an Alta Bicycle Share subsidiary. So Alta, very well known in the bike share community. Now, reading from the announcement from Alta Bike Share, they said that they'll work with 8D to launch and operate the next generation of bike share in 2014, named BSS V4. The next generation of the 8D system has been in development for a few years and builds upon the award-winning BSS V3 platform developed by 8D and currently deployed successfully in bike share systems in cities such as Washington, D.C., Boston, Minneapolis, Melbourne, Australia, London, Toronto, Ottawa, and Montreal. Now, the next Alta bike share system that is scheduled to be deployed is in Portland, Oregon. So sounds like Portland is going to be the first place that will get this new system. Again, according to Alta's announcement, the new system has a sleek design, and it sounds like it also has smaller electronics boards and better screens, also a improved docking mechanism and some additional enhancements as well. So it's nice to see that even with the bankruptcy of Bixi, new developments in the world of bike share are continuing to help make improvements for users worldwide. Hey, before we move on, it's time to thank another one of our show sponsors, and that is Fezzari Bicycles at FEZZARI.com. Fezzari Bicycles, well, you can sum up Fezzari with three words: custom, quality, and direct. Custom. When you buy from Fezzari Bicycles, you know that you are going to get the bike perfectly fit for you. And that's because every single bike is fully built and tuned to your specifications. You send your specs into Fezzari, they build it to your specs, it's test ridden by a Fezzari technician, and then when it's shipped to you, they simply remove the front wheel, the handlebars, the seat, and the pedals, and it takes you just a couple of minutes to put it together, and it is literally ready to ride and custom fit for you. Quality. Fezzari's engineering, design, and manufacturing methods, they're in a class all their own. They design and build their bikes simply with performance in mind. They spend hours designing, testing, refining, testing again to make sure you get the very best technologies and quality and direct. Fezzari's based here in Utah, and they sell their bikes directly to you, which means by cutting out several middlemen in the process, you're going to pay the lowest price possible for your bike. So what does that mean? That means you're getting an extremely high quality bike with top of the line materials, components, and engineering. You're getting it custom fit for you, and you're getting it at an unbeatable, literally unbeatable price, because they design, engineer, manufacture the bikes, and then sell it straight to you. Plus, Their 30-day money-back guarantee, you can't go wrong. Go to Fezzari.com, F-E-Z-Z-A-R-I.com, and when you do, tell them you heard about it right here on the Fredcast. As always, we thank Fezzari for their support of the show, and we thank you for your support of Fezzari. Moving on to racing news, you may recall that last year, the International Cycling Union, or the UCI, had a bit of a dust-up with some of the national federations as concerns a particular rule in the UCI's rulebook. This is rule number 1.2.019. The rule reads as follows. No license holder may participate in an event that has not been included on a national, continental, or world calendar, or that has not been recognized by a national federation, a continental federation, or the UCI. A national federation may grant special exceptions for races or particular events run in its own country, unquote. The bottom line of this rule is that it says that if you are a UCI-licensed rider, you are prohibited from competing in events that are not officially sanctioned by a national federation. And this became a problem last year for a lot of continental riders and other UCI-licensed riders who participate in non-sanctioned events as a way to help supplement their income. And it became a real issue for these people if they might lose their UCI license or perhaps be sanctioned by the UCI for participating in some of these quote-unquote non-sanctioned events. Well, at the meeting a couple of weeks ago in the Netherlands, the UCI met to discuss the issues surrounding Rule 1.2.019 and decided that for the remainder of 2014, they would suspend enforcement of that rule while looking further at whether or not they want to change or further clarify the rule. According to USA Cycling President and CEO Steve Johnson, quote, although we would have liked to see a concrete resolution regarding Rule 1.2.019, we are nonetheless encouraged that there will be continuing dialogue regarding the worldwide ramifications of the rule in the coming year. In the meantime, we are pleased that enforcement of the rule will be suspended for another year. And I know from talking to UCI licensed racers that they too are very pleased that at least for the time being, the rule is suspended, but everyone is looking for a concrete and final decision on this matter. Hopefully, within 2014. Well, racing has continued throughout 2014 thus far, but so far, no more World Tour races since we last spoke after the Santos Tour Down Under. And as a result, Simon Gerrans is still sitting atop the rankings, followed by Cadel Evans, Diego Ulisi, Richie Porte, Nathan Haas, Robert Hessink, Daryl Impey, Garrett Thomas, Andre Greipel, and Adam Hansen. Now, there are a number of World Tour races coming up in the next month. I've got links to all of them in the show notes, but just to run them down real quick, from March the 9th through the 16th, Paris-Nice; March 12th through the 18th, Tirreno-Adriatico; March 23rd, Milan-San Remo; March 24th through the 30th, the Volta Ciclista a Catalunya; March 28th, it's the E3 Harro-Becca; and on March 30th, Gent-Wevelgem. Well, it looks like women's cycling is definitely taking off among the grand tours. You'll recall that we recently discussed that the ASO, the Amaury Sport Organization, who owns the Tour de France, and by the way, is also a part owner in the Vuelta a España, the ASO decided recently that in 2014, there would be a women's race on the Champs-Élysées on the final day of the Tour de France, so that the women would be racing on the Champs-Élysées in advance of the men's peloton coming through. Well, it looks like the ASO's part ownership on the Vuelta a España seems to be rubbing off, because now the organizers of the Vuelta, Unipublic, have announced that they are looking to add a women's race on the final day of the Vuelta a España in 2015. Now, apparently they can't do it in 2014, or at least this is their excuse, because the final day of this year's Vuelta a España will be an individual time trial, and so the logistics would simply be too difficult. However, it does look like they will be holding a women's race in 2015. And confirming that, race director Javier Guillen told or as Guillen, told Spanish newspaper AS recently, quote, like the Tour will host a women's race on the final day in Paris, the Vuelta wants to do so next year. So great news for women's cycling to see the two of the three major Grand Tours stepping up in this way means that strides are definitely being made. And while we're talking about the ASO and Grand Tours and their ownership or their controlling interest in the Vuelta a España, not to mention, I think, 18 other races, including, of course, the granddaddy of them all, the Tour de France, now a rumor that the ASO is interested in RCS Sport. RCS Sport, the organizers of course, the third of the three Grand Tours, the Giro d'Italia. Of course, RCS Sport also puts on Milan-San Remo, Tirreno-Adriatico, the Giro di Lombardia, and a number of other events as well. However, VeloNews is reporting that ASO's director, Christian Prudhomme, is denying the rumor, and RCS Sport's new general manager, none other than Paolo Bettini, is also said to be downplaying the rumor. But to hear that this is a possibility would be quite interesting because, of course, it would give ASO a dominant, an even more dominant position in the world of international pro racing. Imagine if the ASO was controlling the Vuelta, the Tour, the Giro, and all the other races that the ASO and RCS Sport currently put on. You know, I got to be honest with you. When I first saw the story, I checked the date. Well, it's not April 1st, so there is something going on here. There are some rumblings. It'll be interesting to see whether or not this happens, and of course, you will hear about it here on the Fredcast. You'll probably see it first in our Twitter or Facebook feed, so check there. But at the moment, everybody seems to be denying that this rumor is true or has any validity. Well, by now, anyone who follows professional cycling is well aware that the International Cycling Union, the UCI, not only has a new president in Brian Cookson, but also has a new investigatory panel that is looking into the issue of systematic doping in cycling's past, indeed, perhaps also in its present. Well, earlier this month, Dick Marti, the chairman of the Cycling Independent Reform Commission, the CIRC, made an appeal to anyone who has information that could help the commission understand cycling's doping past. And he asked them to come forward and give testimony. In exchange for their testimony, these individuals should be able to arrange lesser penalties. Now, this doesn't guarantee that those people, like, for instance, a certain cyclist, former professional cyclist from Austin, Texas, it shouldn't necessarily help those individuals get their existing penalties reduced, but there is every possibility that if the information that these individuals give to the CIRC is of sufficient enough value that they would appeal on those people's behalf to try to get their penalties reduced. According to Mr. Marti, the chairman of the CIRC, quote, the primary purpose of our investigation is not to punish doping offenders, but to learn from the past so we can help ensure a better future for cycling. We will treat all witnesses fairly, and so I urge anyone in the cycling community with information that can help our investigation to come forward. We have much work to do over the coming year, and I hope, with the cooperation of the cycling family, the sport has a unique opportunity to learn lessons and regain trust. Now remember, the main focus of the CIRC is to try to figure out what processes and what practices were in place that allowed people to get away with systematic doping in the past. They're also looking at, well, the allegations that you've all heard that Lance Armstrong, for instance, colluded, allegedly, with the UCI. So they're looking at that as well. So you can imagine they would love to get Lance Armstrong's testimony as part of their total investigation. For his part, UCI President Brian Cookson said, quote, today marks an important step in understanding the past and restoring the credibility of our sport. The Cycling Independent Reform Commission will not only help us learn from the past, but will also play an important role in shaping our future processes and practices. I committed to this process before I was elected and I'm pleased to see the CIRC fully operational only a few months later. It is essential that the commission is left to get on with its investigation on a completely independent basis, and I have ensured that all the structures are in place to allow this to happen." Unquote. Now, as you know, I've become a bit jaded when it comes to professional cycling and professional cyclists. I'm a bit skeptical about this process, especially if it means that people who should be punished don't get punished or don't get the punishment, well, at least I think that they should get. But if this process results in the ability for the UCI to rise above its alleged tainted past, and if it allows the UCI and the World Anti-Doping Agency to learn in order to catch cheaters in the future, well, then I think that it was all worthwhile. And so Brian Cookson should be lauded for his efforts. And of course, we'll see in a few months whether those efforts bear fruit. I've heard of the Twinkie defense. I've heard of the disappearing twin defense. And now I've heard of the new car smell defense. It was used recently in a case against Navindra Kumar Jain, age 63, who was charged with misdemeanor vehicular manslaughter in connection with the death of Joshua Alper. Mr. Alper, riding his bike just before, it was about 11:15 a.m. Last November on Highway 1, just north of Santa Cruz, California. The opposite direction came Mr. Jain, driving his brand new black 2013 Tesla Model S electric vehicle. According to the California Highway Patrol, it's alleged that Mr. Jain fell asleep at the wheel at about 11:15 a.m., struck, and killed Mr. Alper head-on. According to a report from the California Highway Patrol, Mr. Jain says that he bought the car about 10 days before the crash occurred, and that the car had a very strong new car smell, and that as a result, Mr. Jain used a baking soda air freshener to try to relieve the strong odor in the vehicle, and that it was either the baking soda air freshener, the new car smell, or both that caused him to fall asleep behind the wheel, drive across the wrong side of the road, and strike and kill Mr. Alper. Now, the case does have yet to be adjudicated, and of course, both sides are saying, on one side, this is preposterous. We've never heard of the new car defense, new car smell defense in our lives before. And on the other hand, the other side saying that indeed that the smell was so strong, partially because Mr. Jain requested synthetic material in the car instead of leather because he's a vegetarian and doesn't believe in using animal products. And so they're, of course, saying that the smell was indeed so strong that that's why he fell asleep. Be interesting to see how this one comes out. By the way, if you're wondering why he was charged with a misdemeanor instead of a felony, it's simply because if he did fall asleep behind the wheel, then in that case, it falls under the realm of ordinary negligence in that he failed to use reasonable care. So it's part of the California law. It's the reason why he was charged with a misdemeanor rather than felony. I'm more interested at this point, of course, to find out whether or not he can get away with this, because quite frankly, it just doesn't pass the smell test. Concluding the news this week is a story that, quite frankly, when I heard about it, I wasn't sure whether or not it was, again, was this another April Fool's joke? Was this a joke? What was the deal? The story that I read came out of the San Francisco Chronicle. It talked about a woman from the Bay Area who was planning on March the 2nd to marry her bicycle. I thought it was really strange. And so I visited her blog. And then, of course, I went to her Indiegogo campaign. Now, Indiegogo is a lot like Kickstarter and a lot of these crowdfunding sites where you go on, talk about a project or a product that you're interested in developing, and you make a video and you encourage people to give you money. In this case, the person who is looking for money is the woman who is planning on marrying her bicycle. Her name is Lisa Nelson, and her bike's name is Steel Spokes, and she's planning to marry Steel on March the 2nd in a Hawaiian-themed kind of luau-style wedding in the Bay Area. On Indiegogo, she was seeking $6,000 to help fund not only her wedding, but also, more importantly, her honeymoon, because you see, Ms. Nelson is planning on riding her bike on what she's calling her bicycling honeymoon for six months. Now, as part of this, she's planning on working on getting her degree. And she's also using this, and this is really the point here, to try to kickstart something called Semester on Cycle. Now, those of you here in the United States may be familiar with something called Semester at Sea and a lot of other sort of study abroad programs that individuals in college do. Her idea is Semester on Cycle, the ability to spend a semester of your college career on a bicycle, learning about the world in which we live. Interestingly, not only does she have her video, as everyone does on these crowdfunding websites, but just like on the crowdfunding websites, you have the opportunity to earn a reward based on how much money you give. So for instance, a couple of people have given her $5 each, and for that, they'll get an official wedding photo. Seven people have given $10 each. They get an original art postcard. And then it kind of goes up from there. You could have gotten invited to the bachelor party. Or for instance, for $150, you could be the person to give away the bride at the wedding. More interestingly, perhaps, for $1,500, you could get a nude photo of the bride. And for $2,000, a nude photo of the bride and the groom. Unfortunately, nobody claimed those two. Anyway, as of this recording, she's raised just shy of $2,000, well shy of her $6,000 goal. Honestly, I understand what she's trying to do. I get the thought of this Semester on Cycle program. It's kind of a unique and interesting idea, especially for those of us that are cyclists and think that would be a cool way for perhaps our kids to spend a semester, maybe learning a little bit more about cycling and about cycling infrastructure and the challenges, etc. I just find her thought of marrying a bicycle a little bit strange, especially at this time when there are lots of folks who are fighting for certain rights when it comes to marriage and the definition thereof. And I worry that an effort like this could derail some of those other very important efforts and the abilities of folks to be seen equally in society for their rights in marriage. No matter what you think of it, in some ways, I just find that this kind of tears down some of those efforts that are going on across the country and around the world. And I think perhaps she might have chosen another way of getting a little bit of publicity. But hey, she and her bike will be out on the roads of the United States for about 6 months. Their route is undetermined. And of course, I wish her a safe ride. I hope she enjoys the ride, and I hope the roads are smooth and she always has tailwinds. Well, before we get to the feature section of this week's show, it's time to thank our third and final sponsor of this week's episode of the Fredcast, and that is lynda.com at lynda.com/Fredcast. What is lynda.com? Well, lynda.com is the online learning site that can help you learn software, design, business skills, a wide variety of subjects with some great video training to help you achieve your personal and professional goals. I signed up for lynda.com, and that's the reason why I wanted them here as a sponsor, because lynda.com is a subscription service for members. And members get unlimited access to an incredibly large library of very high quality, up-to-date, totally engaging, and helpful video tutorials on a wide variety of subjects. I told you on the last show, I needed to learn a little bit more about the latest version of AutoCAD, which I use in my day job. Lynda.com gave me incredible training that I am using every single day. I watched on my iPad. I watched on my computer. I was able to stop on my iPad and restart exactly in the same place on the computer. I was able to use the same data files, the example files that the instructors were using, so that I could open them up in AutoCAD while I was viewing what the instructors were doing. And hey, if you want to learn a little bit about Photoshop, if you want to get some business skills, design skills, you can get it all at lynda.com. And the great thing is, by simply being a Fredcast listener, you can get a 7-day free trial of lynda.com. Simply go to lynda.com, that's lynda.com/Fredcast, lynda.com/Fredcast. Sign up there for 7 days of free unlimited access. Give it a try. I think you're going to like it, and I think that you will want to subscribe to lynda.com. Again, lynda.com/Fredcast is where you can go for your 7-day free trial. Give it a try. I know you're going to like it. Thanks to lynda.com for supporting the Fredcast, and thank you for supporting lynda.com. Well, let's get right into the feature section of this week's show. And we start today with an interview I did earlier this week with Tyler Servaz. Tyler Servaz from the Rockwell Relay at rockwellrelay.com. We had Tyler on the show once before, he was talking about the Rockwell Relay, but the event has grown and there are a lot of great changes. And I invited him back again to tell you a little bit about this very unique and very fun sounding event. So here's my interview with Tyler Servaz from Rockwell Relay. Hey, I'm really pleased to welcome back to the show somebody who was on a couple of years ago talking about a great event, which has grown a lot since then, and we're going to get into it. I want to welcome back from the Rockwell Relay, Tyler Servaz. Hey, Tyler.
Hey, how's it going, David?
Great. Thanks so much for coming back on the Fredcast. So for those people who, and I can't imagine that they're out there, but who didn't listen to our original interview a couple of years ago when we talked about the Rockwell Relay, give me the bullet. What is the Rockwell Relay?
So the Rockwell Relay is a road bicycle relay. It runs from Moab, Utah to St. George, Utah. It's set up in a pretty, I think, unique format where we have four member teams. There's just one team size available. We have exchange points set up along the way that are preset. And there's some strategy involved in this thing where you've got to determine when you sign up which rider is going to be rider 1, 2, 3, and 4, meaning that rider 1 will ride legs 1, 5, and 9, rider 2, 6, 10, et cetera. So you've got to look at the parkours and really decide, look at the route and really decide ahead of time who your best climber is, who your best rider on the flats is, and slot them into those positions.
Hey, for people who may not be familiar with this portion of our great state, what kind of a distance are we talking about from Moab to St. George, and what are the leg lengths?
Sure. As the crow flies, it's only a couple hundred miles between Moab and St. George, but we like to be a little more creative. So we've stretched it out to 527 miles. We've taken three national parks. So we crossed through Capitol Reef. We crossed through Bryce Canyon. And also Cedar Breaks National Park.
Yep.
The average leg lengths are about 45 miles. Some are a little shorter with a lot of climbing, or some are a little bit longer. But you do three legs, I should say, of about 45 miles each.
What do you do when you're not riding?
That's the fun thing about this event. It's really a combination of a bicycle race or bicycle ride and a road trip combined. So while you're not riding, you're in the car with your buddies, and you're recovering, you're sleeping, you're eating, you're generally just having a good time. We have our exchange sponsors are wonderful. Some of them do breakfast burritos. It might be 3 a.m, you're eating breakfast burrito in Henryville, Utah.
So it kind of reminds me of this running relay that takes place across the country that we've all heard about. So it's sort of ride, eat, sleep, you know, do it all over again, right?
Sure. That's the idea. And this year's our fifth running of the event. And as these things tend to go, sometimes it gets a little bit more elaborate every year. And we started out with most teams jumping into a van or an SUV, throwing the seats down to sleep in the back. Now we've got teams that are bringing motorhomes and you know, they're in the lap of luxury. They get a shower in between legs, and they take a nap on the queen-size bed in the back. But there's lots of ways to do it.
Now, I mean, you've used two words here, and I want to address that, because this is an event I really want to do. And as you and I talked about, unfortunately, I'm going to be out of town this year, and I can't do it. But you've used the words race and the words ride. And, you know, a lot of listeners are used to doing centuries and metrics and doubles and things like that. And for some people, they do those as a race. And for other people, they do them just for, you know, checking it off the list and completing it and feeling the sense of accomplishment for doing it. What about your participants? Is this a race or is it a ride?
Yeah, good question. And I did mention those two terms specifically because of that, because we offer two categories. So there's a competitive category where you're racing for a placing and for prizes and that fastest time. And there's the non-competitive, which is being able to enjoy that experience to the fullest. and be able to have that accomplishment of, hey, our team did this 527-mile event. So there's either, and you actually have the option of starting as one and switching to the other. Well, I should say you can start competitive, and if you chose to, you could drop back to the non-competitive.
Now, how, you know, when you said this is your fifth year, when you started, how many teams did you have? And then, of course, last year, how much did that grow to?
Sure. So our first year, we ran it with 27 teams, which was four-person teams and one person on the road at a time. That's only 27 people in a bicycle race, mm-hmm. Over 500 miles. So it was some humble beginnings, but we've had great success with it. We've been able to grow year over year. We had 100 teams last year. And this year we're looking at doubling that. We're already well on our way to 200 teams.
Wow.
Might seem like a lot, but when you consider the distances that these riders are spread over, there's not a lot of huge packs out there. We also are offering a staggered start this year where you can pick one of three start times based on how fast you feel like you'd be able to complete the course.
So let's talk a little bit about that. Let's talk about dates. Now, this is in June. I noticed, and I'm sure that this wasn't on purpose, you're starting on Friday the 13th of June.
Yeah, it wasn't. We have a tradition of the second Saturday or the second Friday and Saturday in June each year. And this year it falls on June 13th and 14th. We have riders that really with logistics of things, you'd need to show up in Moab, Utah on the 12th of June. We have a rider a pack and pick up, and we've got a barbecue going and a lot of fun activities that evening, and then we start early the next morning.
Now, you said early, and you've got the staggered starts. What are those staggered starts?
6 a.m., 9 a.m., and noon.
And so does it work sort of the reverse? If you think you're going to be really fast, you start at noon, or how does that work?
That is correct.
Okay, got it.
The fastest riders, the categorized riders, and those that are going for the course record, we'll take off at noon, and at 6 a.m. we have a number of tandem teams that will be going and other riders who just want to give themselves that cushion. But what we've found is that there's much more excitement at the finish line where we've got a condensed group of riders finishing, and it's a little bit easier on our staff to have a smaller window of finish line.
Last year, and I don't even know, I'm going to surprise you with this question. Last year, what was the fastest finish, and what was the team that came in, the time of the team that came in last?
Yeah, so the fastest team was right around 27 hours. And the last team, we officially closed the finish line at 10 p.m. But we have teams that will finish outside of that. But that's about what we've seen up around the low 30s.
Yeah, see, that would be me. I'd start at 6 a.m. and finish well after 10 p.m. on Saturday. So, what about the makeup of the teams? Are there categories and classifications, all male teams, all female teams, co-ed teams? How does that work?
Yes, there are. We do have categories and classifications. We've been predominantly male teams, to be direct on that, but we have had a number of co-ed teams. We've had a handful of all-female teams. That category, if you're thinking about it, that's one to jump into because it's going to blow up. But the co-ed actually has been really competitive in the past, along with the others, but there's a lot of going back and forth there. We've got we've got a defending championship team that's won all three of the last years in that co-ed category. And then we have some age grouping and some different options there as well.
Got it. Now, I'm familiar with obviously that route, Moab to St. George. I mean, you mentioned Bryce Canyon. I think a lot of people are very familiar with Bryce Canyon. It's just a gorgeous, amazing, staggering place if you've never seen it. Capitol Reef, a lot of people are not very familiar with, but again, I've been there and it's just some spectacular scenery. It's one of my favorite national parks here in Utah, believe it or not. But a lot of people may not be familiar with the route. What kind of scenery, what can they expect to see? And I guess along those lines, how much elevation change can they expect?
Yeah. So the Rockwell Relay is One of the wonderful things about this event is the varied topography, because you'll be starting in the red rock and in the desert, and temperatures might hit 100 degrees or a little better. But then you'll also hit several climbs, including Boulder Mountain and Cedar Breaks, which get right up, bump up right against 10,000 feet. Those will often be climbed at night in the dark. So we ride nonstop from start to finish. So you'll switch to lights and reflective gear and so forth to ride through the night segments. But we might have temperatures drop into the 30s or 40s on those high mountain passes at night. And then the weather is unpredictable in the spring. So sometimes we've seen snow on those mountaintops and rain, of course. But there is nothing like riding through Capitol Reef, this gorgeous canyon, at 2 in the morning with the headlight on, and the moon's out, and just the amazing scenery around you, and the solitude of riding a bicycle through the desert. It's pretty amazing.
That's really cool. Again, as the event has grown, I'm guessing that the participants come from all over. So just maybe you don't know, but what was the team that came from the farthest last year?
You know, we had riders from the East Coast, from New Jersey, from New York. We've certainly had riders from all over the West and Midwest. This year, actually, even though we're a Utah-centric event, we've partnered a lot with the state of Utah and others to help showcase our state. And we are about one quarter of our current registrants are Utah residents. The other three quarters are all coming from outside of Utah. We're really trying to help spotlight Utah and have this be a destination event where you travel in and get to see some amazing country that you wouldn't otherwise see in or so intimately in a car that you would, you know, see on a bicycle.
Oh, I've always said the best way to see any place is on two wheels, on a bike. It's not in a car. And I know that that's true for Utah. Now, you mentioned travel arrangements. Obviously, St. George has a brand new airport, and there's a regional airline that flies in there, and it's not that far from Las Vegas for those who want to travel. But what about getting to Moab for people who, again, aren't from the area?
Yeah, in Moab, there's a couple of options. One is there are connecting flights from Salt Lake City and from Denver that fly into a small airport there in Moab. The other option, and because this event does require you to have a vehicle to provide your support and follow along, would be to fly into Salt Lake City and rent a vehicle and drive that through the course, and then turn in the rental in St. George or return to Salt Lake City. The fares are typically cheaper from Salt Lake City, and it's about a four-hour drive on the interstate from St. George back to Salt Lake.
And again, for people who don't know, what's the drive like from Salt Lake to Moab?
That's about 3 hours.
Yeah. And again, if you don't know, Salt Lake is certainly a Delta hub. Southwest flies in here, Frontier, I mean, United, American, US Air, everybody comes here basically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that really, really helps. Hey, we talked before we started recording that you had an idea of maybe a way to try to get some Fredcast listeners involved. So tell me about that.
Yeah. We'd love to have riders from the Fredcast listeners to join us. Well, what we'd like to do is offer a free individual entry as part of a team entry. So teams register together, all four riders together, but we'd like to offer one free individual entry, I should say, as a part of a team entry to help that person who's willing to go out and grab a couple of their friends and encourage them to join them for this awesome event. We'd like to say thanks by providing that free entry. So, David, we've got a process there, I think, on that.
We do. We talked about that. So here's what we're going to do. And by the way, I've got an inducement for you as well, guys. Here's what we're going to do. Send me an email if you're interested in participating, and make sure that your subject line says Rockwell Relay. And then what we'll do is all the emails that we receive by by March the 15th, 2014, we'll just draw one at random, and you'll be the winner of the free individual entry as long as your team goes ahead and enters and participates in the Rockwell Relay. And if you do, and if you're interested in doing so as Team Fredcast, we're going to be releasing our new Team Fredcast kit here, and I will give that same individual a free jersey as well. So another inducement for doing it. Tyler and I didn't talk about that, but I thought that'd be kind of cool if there was a Team Fredcast out there. So again, get me your email. Subject line Rockwell Relay. Get it in by March 15th. And we'll pick one at random, and then we'll put you together with Tyler, and you guys can get out there on the road and enjoy the ride from Moab to St. George. I'm jealous. I wish I could do it. Tyler, anything we've forgotten? Anything else you want the listeners to know?
A couple things, a couple ways to keep track of what we're doing is if you search us up on Facebook, Rockwell Relay. We're often doing different promotions, contests, and prizes for those that follow that. And we also have the most current updates. And, of course, our website. We've spent a lot of time with information as far as route profiles and maps and photographs. And if you want to learn about the event and what the ride could be like, go there. Take a look at the website and do some research.
And I have to give you kudos on your website because, you know, I do a lot of cycling events, and sometimes you go to the sites and there's just not enough info there. You have a wealth of information there. You've got some videos that give people an idea of what's involved, maps. You've got your race Bible. So there's just a lot of great information there. So yeah, everybody check it out. It's at rockwellrelay.com. Tyler, thanks again for coming on the Fredcast. I will keep you posted, and hopefully we'll have a Team Fredcast out there on the road come June.
Sounds good. Thank you, David.
Hey, Tyler, thanks again for coming on. Well, that was Tyler Servaz from Rockwell Relay. Don't forget the special offer we told you about. Make sure that you send in your emails, and maybe you can be out there riding the Rockwell Relay with three of your friends. And if so, please either take some video or send us some audio. We would love to hear all about your adventures riding from Moab to St. George in Utah in June. Now, before we end the show today, I want to give you a little bit of a product review. This is a product that I found at this year's Outdoor Retailer Winter Market Show. Now, I'll occasionally have interviews from Outdoor Retailer when I go and I visit, but one of the challenges, it's a big show, one of the challenges is finding unique and innovative products for cyclists when I go to Outdoor Retailer. This year, however, as I was perusing the offerings, I ran across a new offering from Coghlans, that's Coghlans. Now, you may be familiar with Coghlans. You may have seen their packaging, typically green packaging with a red stripe and their name Coghlans on it. And typically, you'll see these in the camping section of your outdoor specialty store. And so what exactly did Coghlans have for cyclists? Well, these really cool little adhesive signal lights. They come in one of two colors, either green or red. Now think about it. A lot of you will ride with a dedicated tail light that you can turn on and off. We've talked about several of them on the show before, but a lot of times if you're not someone who is actively riding at night, you may not have a signal light on your bike, or you may have one on your bike, and by the time you need to use it, well, maybe the batteries have gone dead, or maybe it's a rechargeable type and it hasn't been charged in quite some time. And that's where these Coghlans adhesive signal lights can really come in handy. Each signal light is about 2 inches tall by about 1 inch wide. It has an adhesive back. It's incredibly thin. I mean, maybe the width of 2 or 3 credit cards, with an adhesive back, a reflective front, an 80-hour battery, and a little signal light, which has a runtime of over 80 hours. It'll do a fast strobe, a slow strobe, or a steady on light. What's really neat about these is that they are dustproof, they're shockproof, and they're submersible. As a matter of fact, Coghlans says that they are waterproof up to a depth of 200 feet. Now, this isn't something that I could see you sticking onto a fender of your bike permanently, or that I could see you sticking onto your seat post permanently. However, now that I've received these and played with them, I'm going to put one inside the saddlebag on every one of my bikes. These are maybe a $5 purchase. I've got a link in the show notes, of course. But what's really great is this way I know that if I should get caught out, maybe my ride turned out to be a little bit longer than I thought. Maybe I'm a little bit more tired. Maybe I got too many flats. Whatever the reason, we've all been caught out in the dark. And if we're not regular nighttime cyclists, we all wished we had something like this Coughlin's adhesive signal light with us. Therefore, I'm keeping one in every one of my saddlebags from now on. That way I know that should I get caught out, I've still got that extra measure of safety of a very bright light, which according to Coughlin's on their website and also on the packaging, these things, because of the reflective back and the brightness of the light, can be seen for up to a half a mile. That means this is something that's going to keep me safe when I'm out there on the road, or at least make sure that drivers and other road users will see me. Once again, these are the Coughlin's adhesive signal light. I think this is a great addition to every cyclist saddlebag. Well, before we get to our PodSafe cycling music, it is time to thank our show sponsors, starting with Jensen USA at jensenusa.com/thefredcast, which is where you are going to get everything for your cycling lifestyle. Great selection, incredible prices, and some of the best customer service you have ever seen. That's jensenusa.com/thefredcast. And of course, Fezzari Bicycles at fezzari.com. That's F-E-Z-Z-A-R-I.com for custom with their 23-point custom fitting program, quality and direct, which means you are getting a high-end bike for not a high-end price. And of course, our newest sponsor, lynda.com at lynda.com/fredcast. Go to lynda.com when you want to learn almost anything. And by using that special link, you'll get 7 days of free unlimited access to prove to yourself what I've proved to myself, which is how wonderful lynda.com's training is. And of course, we have to thank you for all of your PayPal donations. And of course, don't forget to go check out the Fredcast store for our new 2014 Team Fredcast kit. And of course, if you'd like to stay in touch with the Fredcast and know the moment that 2014 kit is released and everything else that we do around here, please check out our website at www.thefredcast.com or follow along with us on Twitter. We are simply known as Fredcast, or find us on Facebook at facebook.com/thefredcast. If you'd like to send us some feedback, please use the email address. It's thefredcast@gmail.com, or use our listener hotline at area code 661-513-FRED. That's 661-513-3733. Or use the SpeakPipe page. Simply click on that link on the right-hand side of every page on thefredcast.com and use your computer's microphone to send us a voicemail right from the website. And now it's finally time for PodSafe Cycling Music. And of course, this week's PodSafe Cycling Music was chosen specifically for the Fredcast by IndoorCyclingMusic.com. That's the home of the free weekly featured track and premium members content of weekly 30 and 60 minute cardio mixes and monthly 90 minute cardio mixes to get the world moving. Check them out at www.IndoorCyclingMusic.com. Now, this week's track is a name that you may know. It's George Thorogood and the Destroyers. The track is called Anytown, USA. Well, that's going to do it for this week's episode of the Fredcast. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks for staying subscribed, and thank you for telling your friends and riding buddies about the Fredcast Cycling Podcast. We'll be back again soon with another episode of the show, but between this show and the next, enjoy the music. But most of all, enjoy the ride.
Jacob's Field, take me. summer.